I'm thoroughly going through the ZANU-PF draft. You can't even call it a counter-proposal. It's a standalone document with little relation to the work that we have painstakingly done over the last 3 years, which we concluded on the 18th of July 2012. We are disappointed that this document is such an asymmetrical document to the things that we painstakingly agreed on the basis of give and take. So there's more than bad faith being reflected by ZANU-PF.
So can you tell us some of the key issues that they're proposing?
They've basically altered this document fundamentally. They've just, I'm summarizing on the key issues. The first thing that they've done is to alter the provision on citizenship. The agreed draft makes it very clear that any offspring, any descendant born in Zimbabwe of a SADC citizen is a citizen of Zimbabwe by birth. So you are talking of the thousands of immigrant labor that is in Zimbabwe from Malawi, from Zambia, from Mozambique, who are here, who were born here, they are citizens. And you recall that these were made stateless and citizenless by ZANU-PF in 2000, unless you had renounced your citizenship. That is gone. Secondly, they've drastically altered the provisions to deal with the national objectives of the state. For instance, there is now a standalone provision that deals with the issue of indigenization and empowerment. Everyone knows that indigenization is temporal. The constitution which was drafted allowed for equality, but they recognized that there to be affirmative action. So they're now making something that is temporal to the extent that affirmative action is only used to redress a situation. But once the balance has been achieved, it dies. But that's now a permanent situation. This is most unfortunate because all of the parties on the table have got their own party policies. You can't take your party policy and then put it in the constitution. Another party policy that has been put in this constitution is their preferred position that all youths should go national youth service in this country. That was not in the original constitution. It is now in this constitution. So this is most unfortunate. They've also totally abolished the issue of devolution. They're now calling it decentralization, and you'll not find the word devolution in this provision. We also, in the agreed constitution, had come up with a president who was subject to clear separation of powers between the judiciary and the legislature, and a president who exercised executive power, sharing it with cabinet. This constitution reverts to a situation where the president only has got executive powers, and that cabinet only sits at his instance. The current draft that we negotiated obliges the president to seek the authority of parliament before he declares war. This one, the president has got a blank check and so forth. They've recreated the old imperial president that some of us have spent all our lives fighting. You remember we had created an independent office of the National Prosecuting Authority and a standalone attorney general who will be appointed by the president to advise the president. But no, says ZANU-PF, they've abolished that, and that same attorney general who sit in cabinet, who sit in parliament, is also the one that will attend to the issues of prosecution. They've also virtually abolished the Constitutional Court. What they've simply said is that the Supreme Court will sit as the Constitutional Court. So that independent standalone Constitutional Court that we've created also falls away. They've done a lot of things, but I've just tried to highlight the major things that they've done to this Constitution.
Right. So what is the response from your party?
As far as we are concerned, there should be no further negotiations on this constitution, and let the people of Zimbabwe now decide in a referendum whether or not the political parties who negotiated this draft were true to the people's views expressed in their outreach program. So in our respective view, let the people of Zimbabwe be the referees in this matter.
But how will you force a referendum if ZANU-PF is refusing to move on with the original and final draft constitution?
We have to resort to the GPA. Remember Article 6 of the GPA, which is now Article 6 of the 8th schedule of the Constitution of Zimbabwe, is the one that obliged the political parties to come up with the constitution following the process that we have followed of stakeholders conference, public consultations, the drafting, the constitution itself and the referendum. So what this means is that the guarantors to that agreement were clearly specified in Article 23 of the GPA, which is also Article 23 of the 8th Schedule of our Constitution, must intervene. And that is to say President Zuma and SADC. And you recall that one of the resolutions of the Maputo Summit, where we've just come from, was that the facilitator would be watching closely whatever happens on the Constitution, and that you would be called to intervene. And I would expect that whether we like it or not, the facilitator and indeed SADC will be faced with the situation. But one will hope that the few decent people in ZANU-PF, we hope that wisdom and decency can prevail, and we can stick back to our original draft, and we can move this country forward. The people of Zimbabwe have suffered, and if ZANU-PF insists on the current draft as it stands, then I foresee months and months again of attrition, of debilitating negative energy, which will again throw this country backwards. I think what the people of Zimbabwe want is to have the constitution go to a referendum, have important reforms, including media reform, security sector reform, put conditions that create an uncontested election. That's what the people of Zimbabwe want.
But if you bring in SADC or the mediator, won't you be forced again into these endless negotiations that you complain about?
Well, I mean, I can't prejudge what the negotiator or SADC will do. But sitting from our point of view as the MDC, we agreed on this process and we signed on to this process. And when we signed on to this process, the GPA doesn't say that the parties must all support in a referendum the constitution that they've signed to. So we think that let's go to a referendum, and those who are unhappy with this constitution, those who feel that this constitution is not a true reflection of the people's views, they must campaign against that with all the attendant risks that you know that that might lead to violence. But let the people express their views, and those who are unhappy should do so in the ballot box of the referendum. Another option, and we're not suggesting this or imposing this on anyone, another option would be to say, fine, you, the negotiators, the parties came up with their own draft of the 18th July. You, ZANU-PF, you want to exercise veto over the people of Zimbabwe. Let's take your draft, let's have two drafts, and let the people of Zimbabwe either reject both drafts or vote for the draft that they think is closer to what they aspire. And in short, let the people of Zimbabwe decide.
Just going through some of the responses on your Facebook, it seems that a lot of people are not surprised that this is happening again. A follower says, you are sleeping with an enemy who will never change, and no matter how flexible you become, something will be brought up again by ZANU-PF. So what is your response to this?
Three things. The first one is that miracles do happen. And sometimes we do things not because we want to, but because objective reality demands that we do so. That is why ZANU-PF unwillingly were brought to the negotiating table, signed a GPA, signed various numerous agreements that brought us to the inclusive government that started work on the 16th of February 2009. And you will agree with me that if you had asked the majority of people in Zimbabwe, the majority of international opinion in SADC overseas, they would not have given this inclusive government more than 6 months, but it has lasted. So that is a miracle, but it has happened. And it is on the basis of that, knowing fully well the kind of character or characterless, clueless individual that we have dealt with, we've persevered in a very painful inclusive government. Some of us, in my case, we've had bombs sent at our houses, bullets sent in our letterboxes. We are daily vilified every day, the prime minister, members of our party, but we've stung on. And you know, the constitution that we came up with, that we agreed on the 18th of July, we did not negotiate it as MDC. We negotiated with the ZANU-PF. And in fact, we actually came up with a draft that can hold its own against any other constitution in the world. When you draft a constitution, you are bound by certain self-evident principles, constitutional principles. One of them, for instance, is the principle of separation of power. One of them, for instance, is the issue of ensuring that citizens are protected, so you've got a strong Bill of Rights. One of them, for instance, is the need to ensure that there is good governance, the issue of free, fair, and regular elections. So all these basic things, you find them in this constitution. And on the basis of these principles, the modern constitution, you can basically download it from the internet. In other words, it can write itself. And I'm saying those basic fundamental things, you'll find them there. There are certain things that you may be unhappy with. For instance, the size of the legislature, the issues around the running mates, why should we have two vice presidents in a small country like this one, the issue around land provision. There are certain things that are unique to Zimbabwe. But as a constitutional document respecting well-known fundamental constitutional grundnorms, the constitution that we agreed on the 18th of July 2012 passes that test.
Either way, whatever constitution Zimbabwe was going to get, it was going to be a compromise. But comparing this...
There's no constitution in the world which is not a compromise.
Yes, but comparing...
The constitution that is generally granted is the best constitution in the world. It's a South African one. And I can tell you that it was negotiated at Kempton Park in 1992. So there is no constitution in the world that is not negotiated. What is critical is, in the process of negotiation, do you have authority from the people? Authority, one, in terms of the authority of the people that are representing, and two, the authority in terms of the views, the public legitimation exercise, which Zimbabwe has carried out through the public outreach program.
In hindsight, would it have been better to go with the Kariba draft or even the 2000 draft?
No ways. This constitution is far much better than Kariba, and Kariba itself, which is far much better than the rejected constitution. There is no competition between the two documents. Absolutely no competition at all. Just to give you an example, the issue of devolution, you don't find it in all other previous documents. And it's so fundamental a principle in our constitutional dispensation, given 32 years of uneven and unequal distribution of resources in this country. The issue of two terms of office, not just for the head of state, but even for army generals, for heads of parastatals, it's such an important thing for permanent secretaries. It's such an important issue in the devolution of the state. The issue of citizenship that we've created in this constitution is such a departure from the old genus of citizenship that we've created. The Bill of Rights that we've created, which we can only be changed in a referendum, you don't find that in previous constitutions. So you can't compare this draft and Kariba and the 2000 rejected constitution. And let me tell you something about constitutional making. Constitutional making is a reflection of the balance sheet of the political forces in the country. In 2000, the democratic forces were weaker than what they were when we made Kariba. They are stronger now than what we were in 2007 when we made Kariba. After all, democratic forces are now also are now state actors to the extent that they're in government. So if you study closely the rejected constitution, the Kariba draft, and in fact, don't forget the 2004 draft that was negotiated between MDC and ZANU, represented by Welshman Ngube and Patrick Namasa. It's another constitution. You find that all those constitutions are far much weaker than the current constitution, because that also reflects the weakness of the opposition of that time. You now have an opposition that is in government. So a constitution is indeed a balance sheet of the strengths and weaknesses of the political forces in that country.
Outside of this prolonged negotiations with ZANU-PF, what other ideas do you have as the MDC of unlocking the Zimbabwe crisis?
Well, look, I think there's a little appreciation of the role that South Africa has done for this country, of the role that mediation is done for this country. And I think our people have got memories. People must remember the status quo ante of 2008. We had inflation of 5 billion%. There was absolutely no food in any shop or a supermarket. Agricultural production for maize had sunk to as little as 200,000 metric tons. Tobacco, 32 million kilograms. People were starving. There was cholera in this country. 90,000 people were affected by cholera. 4,000 people died from cholera. We had total collapse of the state with the GDP growth falling to minus 14%. So what SADC mediation did was to say, look, let's put a stop to this. And indeed, whether you like it or not, the inclusive government did put an end to that hemorrhage, and we were able to restart this economy, rebuild this economy, restore the fabrics of the social contract that had been destroyed by ZANU-PF through 14 years of mismanagement that saw 60% of our economy being devalued. But people have short memories that, in fact, the GPA itself was actually a miracle that to have Robert Mugabe shaking hands with Morgan Tsvangirai, his arch enemy, it was actually a miracle. So never underestimate that dialogue. And one of the things you need to understand is that because of the hardcore attitudes in ZANU-PF, it is very difficult for ZANU-PF to respect MDC, to accept that the MDC exists. So that's why you need the referee, the impartiality of the facilitator. The people again misunderstand the resolutions that SADC have come. I've been reading on the website with people say people came out of SADC with nothing. The issue of Zimbabwe was not resolved. I beg to differ. SADC said in Maputo, number one, we restated all the previous resolutions on which we have made from SADC, and there are many important resolutions that have been made. Number two, they said, look, we know that we've got a problem of implementation. So you go and define an implementation mechanism that will sit in cabinet and that will oversee line ministries that are refusing to implement the GPA. Thirdly, you come up with a roadmap with the timelines which will enable you to go to an election. Number four, go and deal with the constitution and take it to a referendum. Now, these are important decisions. SADC is a GINA, a source of international law. So international law is prevailing over Zimbabwe because municipal law, domestic law has failed. So if you fail to appreciate the importance of dialogue, then unless you have got 50 million people and you are going to do an Arab Spring, or unless you are going to find someone who bombed Zimbabwe for you, then there is no option to peaceful dialogue. And some of us don't believe in arms, don't believe in guns, we believe in dialogue. Therefore, we've got absolute faith in dialogue and in the facilitation of South Africa and in President Zuma.
There are some critics who say the MDC seems to have succumbed and is now in a comfort zone of being dragged into these endless negotiations. What can you say about this?
Well, look, you know, it's very easy to say that when you are in an air-conditioned apartment in London or Cape Town, it's those things are easy. We have been in this struggle for many years, Violet. Some of us, we don't go to nightclubs. I used to watch Black Rhinos. We don't do that. We've been arrested. We've been tortured. We've been beaten up. But we've looked at this beast in the eye, and we have not blinked. We have looked at this beast in the eye without resorting to arms or weapons. We were a small, tiny little party formed a mere 13 years ago. Now we are the biggest party in Zimbabwe through peaceful, non-violent means. So our means have worked and are working, and we are very, very close to achieving ultimate democratic change in Zimbabwe. Look at the ANC. They were formed 100 years ago, 100 years ago, and they only attained democratic rule a mere 16, 20 years ago. So, and we were only formed 13 years ago. So the issue of impatience and so forth, those are statements that are made by people who underestimate how ugly this dictatorship is. The ZANU-PF dictatorship is probably the most refined dictatorship on the continent. So the people who are fighting for change and democracy in Zimbabwe, whether or not they belong to the MDC, in the churches, in the unions, they are genuine, true heroes, because they are fighting a complicated dictatorship that has no shame and that will take risks. So I'm very proud of what we are doing collectively and what the people of Zimbabwe are doing collectively to establish democracy in their country against a very difficult opponent and an extremely bloodthirsty opponent.
So how do you respond to those who say you seem to have developed a bond or a relationship with ZANU-PF that seems to have eroded your appetite to be able to push for a more radical approach in terms of dealing with ZANU-PF?
We are in this government, but we have not signed a unit accord with the ZANU-PF, and ZANU-PF has not swallowed us. We've got one lead, Demogeni Richard Tsvangirai, a separate party with a separate identity, and we'll continue pursuing our goals until we achieve peaceful democratic change in Zimbabwe. And that is as inevitable as it is foreseeable.
Do you think the MDC is still popular? By this, I mean, is it possible that ZANU-PF could be edging out your party in terms of favorability?
That's not possible. What has ZANU-PF done to... ZANU-PF lost the election in 2008. And what have that day done in the last 3 years that we pursued in right-thinking Zimbabwe to think that our future lies with ZANU-PF? The fact that they can come up with an alternative constitution like this is a reflection of the fact that we are dealing with the party of clowns and dinosaurs, and Zimbabweans want change, and real transformative change. Unfortunately, that cannot come from ZANU-PF.
Based on some recent pollings from the United States-based Freedom House, there's an indication that ZANU-PF is leading your party in favorability. What's your response to this?
Well, I've carefully read the opinion of the Freedom House, and I respect the right of any person to carry out an opinion. But if anyone thinks that the 1,180 people that were polled are a true reflection of an election, then let's go to the referendum right now with ZANU-PF pushing their own constitution, and let's see who will win. Let's go to the actual election and let's see who will win.
So basically you're saying it's not a true reflection of the situation on the ground?
I can't comment on the professionalism of those who carried out the opinion poll, but if an opinion poll is conducted in Zimbabwe and someone tells me that the medium of choice is the ZBC and the Herald, then that is insane. The most popular media in Zimbabwe is the Studio 7, and we all know that. The most popular media in Zimbabwe is DSTV. That's why you see this little satellite dish on every roof in Zimbabwe. So if one someone were to tell me in an opinion poll that the medium of choice is the Herald, then there's something wrong. So I respect the Freedom House and what they've done, but we will do our work as we have been doing. And as I said before, let's go for a referendum, let's go for an election, and we'll see.
What is your take regarding who should be sitting on the table from the other MDC?
Watchman Mube was elected by Congress. That Mutambara did not even participate. Mutambara did not even challenge Watchman Mube. And I saw a video where Mutambara was congratulating Watchman Mube. I'm very concerned about that issue as an individual, because this generation can't do things that ZANU-PF were doing. Even Robert Mugabe tries to have legitimacy. Now, you can't say when you have not even participated in an election, you call yourself as the president of a party. That doesn't happen.
So what do you make of the accusations that have been made by Professor Arthur Mutambara and also by Professor Jonathan Moyo, saying that President Zuma is abusing SADC to help his in-law, Professor Watchman Mube?
That's rubbish. Zuma was not in the Congress of MDCM in January of last year. He wasn't there. He's not the one who chose Watchman Mube. So that's absolutely rubbish. I think the energy with which ZANU-PF is defending Mutambara is to some proof beyond reasonable doubt that Mutambara has been compromised by ZANU-PF. Don't do that to any other member of the opposition. Once you are now being defended by the likes of Jonathan Moyo, you must know that you are finished.
But isn't Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai also defending Mr. Mutambara if he still goes to the principal's meeting with him?
He's not. There were court applications, and in the absence of court applications, nobody could challenge the position. But I'm aware of you, so don't abuse him. He's not. But now there are court judgments, and the situation is very clear. And also the SADC summit has made a decision, which our president accepts.
No, the reason I was saying this was, I understand that early this week, the principals held a meeting, and Professor Ngube was not invited, but Professor Mutambara was invited.
Remember, the person who swore the people is Robert Mugabe, not Morgan Tsvangirai. So don't visit the omissions and commissions of Robert Mugabe on Morgan Tsvangirai. Please don't do that.
The whole week people
Mutambara
have been reporting
is an imposter to democracy. He's an imposter to democracy. Mutambara is trying through the back door to rewrite the constitution. The constitution says there are three political parties with three leaders. Now we suddenly find four leaders, and that's the point that was put to him in Maputo, which nobody had an answer. Since did we revise the GPA? And to our recollection, some of us, we've never revised the GPA.